You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Jeff Bossert, sitting in for Celeste Quinn today, and I am joined by Peter Kimball. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Faculty Staff Training Consortium. Well, at this third Thursday of the month, we normally take your calls for Peter, and he can share some new knowledge about use of the internet or other things, other technology issues related to computers. But we'll be happily taking your calls at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, the toll-free number outside of the immediate WILL listening area. Good afternoon, Peter. Good to have you.
It's always nice to be here. Thank you.
One of the things that we talked about, I guess we could jump in before we hear from some listeners, is internet safety. We talked about specifically with children, and I guess were there more safeguards put into place a few years ago that now websites are finding a way around, and parents are maybe find it more difficult to keep their children from checking out websites that they shouldn't be?
I don't know if it's really any more difficult. It was never really completely automatic, and kids who wanted to find sites that were inappropriate were always able to get to them. Major concern these days is, as there have been a lot of news reports lately, a lot of the contacts that kids make in many of the social networking spaces, such as MySpace and others, may not necessarily be with other kids. So they just simply need to be aware of, and parents need to make sure that they keep communication lines open with their kids about some things that you just don't do online, such as give personally identifying information, your address, your phone number, your actual real email address, what school you go to. And if that and keeping track of what the kids are doing, you know, if your child, especially pre-adolescent or just barely post-adolescent, spends lots and lots of time online in the room with the door closed, you need to be aware of what's going on. A lot of it are relatively common sense issues.
Well, you mentioned MySpace. I mean, it seems like every other day I'm turning on the TV seeing some kind of story about someone who posted information they shouldn't have on that website.
Well, and the problem is MySpace is a wonderful social networking tool, and kids have a lot of fun with it. They can certainly make a lot of good contacts, but it should be people that they know within their school. The problem is if somebody says in a space like that that, you know, they're a 12-year-old girl, it might be a 12-year-old girl, it might be a 40-year-old guy out there someplace who is essentially a child predator. And so it behooves parents to be aware of that. I'd even suggest that in many cases, parents, or one parent at least, go ahead and create their own MySpace logon and just explore what it's like and see the kinds of things that are there. It's safe and it's fun as long as common sense is used, which means not posting all of the information about, gee, I go to such and such a junior high school and I always walk by this bus stop and I see this and, you know, I've got blonde hair and my name is Sally. That's not the kind of thing that you want to put out there.
We're taking your calls for Peter Kimball from the U of I, the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the U of I's Faculty Staff Training Consortium at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We have a caller on the on line one right now. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. You know, I'm having now this is computers, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. That's what I you're talking about the online stuff, and I was just wondering. But anyway, we have our mouse has recently been going a little crazy, and what happens is it just starts to, the cursor itself starts to flicker, and I would, like, I'll be writing an email message or something, and it just goes, like, off all the way to the left or to the right, and it gets kind of, like, stuck there, and I'll take the mouse and I'll try and move it back over, and it just flickers, and it just irritates, because it's almost like it's stuck.
Are you using, is it a laptop or is it a desktop machine?
It is a laptop, but we have the mouse plugged into the USB port.
Right. Well, so the laptop itself also has a, when you don't have the mouse plugged into it, the laptop has some way of making mouse movements, either a little kind of eraser pad or a touch pad or something of that sort.
Right. Uh-huh. It's got a touch pad.
Okay. There are a couple of possibilities. First, make sure that the mouse is... You may have tried this, but unplug and plug in the mouse. Make sure there's no problem with it making good contact with the connector.
Okay, and I did that, and it didn't seem to do a lot of good. tried shutting down and restarting, and then it does, and that didn't seem to make a difference. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, but then and then it'll just stop doing it, like you know.
Well,
within 10 minutes or something.
Well, the problem there could be the problem is most likely, of course, because you see the cursor moving over there, the computer is getting some sort of instruction to do that. The question is it coming from the touchpad because there's some incipient failure on the little touchpad on the screen, or is it something that is coming from the mouse? If you can make do without the mouse for a while, in other words, just using the built-in touchpad.
Well, oh, I should have mentioned it, that it's in a docking station.
Okay.
The laptop's in the docking station when this happens.
And it never happens. Do you use it often when it's not in the docking station?
Only when I travel.
So the problem might exist whether or not it's in the docking station. You just haven't used it much, not in the docking station.
Right.
Still, whether it's in a docking station or not, what you might try doing to try to isolate whether the problem's with the mouse or not is spend some time, it'll take a little getting used to, but spend some time without the mouse plugged in.
Okay.
And just use the touchpad and then the buttons that you have on the keyboard. And if this is a symptom that happens when you do have the mouse in, like every once in a while, several times a day, only once in a few weeks, how often typically?
Well, it's been a while since it happened, like maybe a year ago, and at the time there was a really bad, or maybe it was 2 years ago, it had a lot of viruses, and I got those all cleaned out, and it seemed to be fine. And I did the virus check already, and I went through, and I got it all updated and did a whole check, but nothing came up.
Well, I've seen this kind of behavior with a mouse or with a cable that is bad or a mouse that is you know, sending spurious signals. I've also seen it come from a keyboard where especially maybe not so much the touchpad but with the keyboards that have the little pointing device built into
right.
them. And if they're sending, you know, if it's like there's some dust or it's the equivalent of some static or something that can cause a signal that is interpreted as mouse movements.
Okay.
And so that's why you first need to figure out, is it a problem with the mouse?
Okay.
Try using it without the mouse. Or if you have another mouse, another USB mouse that you can plug in, try using that. If it recurs with the new mouse, then you can pretty much eliminate the mouse problem. And if it recurs without using a mouse at all eventually and only using the touchpad, you can pretty much eliminate the mouse as the problem too.
Okay. So basically, I mean, so you've heard of this happening and it's not uncommon?
Well, it's not uncommon.
Okay.
And you're right, it can be a result of a virus or a Trojan, but generally not. I'd say more likely, because it's a mechanical device.
Right.
Whether your mouse, is your mouse one that has the little rollerball, or is it an optical mouse with the little red LED in the bottom?
It's the optical.
Okay, so at least you don't have the mechanical problem there with the little rollerball. That's another thing I would suggest looking at. But
okay.
Still, check the connection, unplug it and replug it several times to clear off any.
What about, so I thought, well, maybe I'd ask about a wireless mouse. I've heard of them. And are those pretty good?
They can be pretty good. You have to keep in mind that a wireless mouse has to have a battery in it, so if the battery runs out, your mouse doesn't work anymore because it's got no wire for the power.
It has no wire to power, okay.
Because that's how the mouse sends its signal. But they work fairly well.
Okay.
You have to have some way, they communicate via radio waves to the computer, and so if your computer has something like Bluetooth technology built in, that's a local, very local area radio connection.
Okay, so that would be the prerequisite for that.
Well,
okay.
To just use a mouse without having to get any other hardware. If you have, if you don't have Bluetooth, you can get a wireless mouse. What you get then is the mouse and a little device that plugs into the USB port of the computer, and the mouse just sends a signal to that little device.
Okay, so that's a possibility as well.
Sure.
Okay. All right, well, good. Hopefully we'll figure it out and get it all taken care of.
Well, good luck.
Thanks for your help.
We're taking your calls for Peter Kimbrell, the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer at the University of Illinois Faculty Staff Training Consortium. You have computer questions, feel free to call us at 333-9455 outside of the immediate the listening area. Toll free, we have a number at 800-222-9455. How common are, you know, has there ever been a plural to the computer mouse, or is it?
They're
is
mice.
The plural, they're mice?
They're
okay.
Mice, sure.
How? I mean, the biggest things I've experienced with mice is just them getting sluggish after a while when you're especially like at a radio station editing with an audio program, after a while you'll just have to replace it because of, you know, I guess it,
Well, if it's a mechanical mouse, sure. And sometimes the little buttons on the mouse can become a little bit flaky, which means you either press on them and nothing happens, or worse yet, they keep clicking themselves by making contact. They're mechanical devices. The optical mice, the ones that work with light, are much more reliable and generally with fewer moving parts aren't going to fail as often, but it's not uncommon.
We have a caller on line one. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a wireless DSL two-wire system in my house.
Okay.
And up until about a week ago, everything worked fine. And then all of a sudden, on my main computer, my desktop, which has the wireless DSL plugged into it, I can surf the net. But when I tried to get onto my Yahoo email, when I put in my password and screen name, it comes up no page displayed. Now I can fire up my laptop right next to it and connect through the Wi-Fi and get right onto my email.
Hmm.
Any suggestions?
So you've got DSL service.
Yes,
the DSL service plugs into your wireless device, wireless access point, I presume.
Yeah, it's
then,
all one unit.
Okay. So it's actually built into the computer.
No, it's built into it. It
sure.
comes out of the wall and the two-wire wireless access point.
Yes, it's the DSL so-called modem and the wireless access point all in one, and then you've got a wired connection from that to your desktop machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then a wireless connection wherever you want to use it, such as for your laptop.
Yep.
And you're able to get to pages from the wireless side, but not from the wired side, but only some pages. For example, the password page.
Only password pages.
Only password pages.
Yep.
So the implication there is that when it's trying to connect to a secure website, the one that gives you the little padlock icon or the little lock icon, that is what you're not able to get with your machine. It's odd that that would be an effect of the wireless router itself. My guess would be that it is a setting that has changed on your desktop machine. Here's what I would try to do to confirm that. Take your laptop and simply, because the laptop has almost certainly an Ethernet connector in it as well, and plug the laptop in. Generally on a laptop you have the ability, often it's a little tray icon. Are you using a Windows-based machine?
Yes, Windows XP on both.
Sure. You'll have typically over by the clock in the lower right-hand side of the taskbar, you'll see a little, depending on the machine, a little icon that indicates your wireless communication is going on, and you can turn that off temporarily.
Uh-huh.
So essentially you turn off the radio and the laptop, plug it in with the same cable that you plugged your desktop in. So now your laptop is acting as a wired machine. And then try to go to those sites and see if you have the same problem. And my first guess would be you'd be able to get through just fine,
mm-hmm.
Which means that it is probably a security setting or an encryption setting on the browser that you were using on your main machine. Which browser are you using?
Internet.
Internet Explorer?
Internet Explorer.
So if the security certificate had gotten damaged on that,
mm-hmm.
For Internet Explorer, it would, when talking to a machine that wants to have a secure connection, they're not going to agree that it's going to be secure between them and you won't be able to display the page. Test that using the... using the laptop. The other thing you can try to do is on your regular desktop machine, download one of the other browsers. You could download Firefox. You could download Opera. They're free for the download.
All right.
And those will have their own security certificates, I presume, and see if that's the problem. And then the question would simply be, I'm not quite sure I can tell you off the top of the head how to do this, but you would need to probably not reinstall Internet Explorer, but go to the Microsoft site and simply do a search for secure connections or unable to make secure connections.
Okay.
But I think the problem is unlikely to be at all related to your DSL wireless line since it's working with a laptop.
Great. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
I believe we have another caller, line 4. Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hey, I've got a continuing problem. And it started with a situation that I have a tendency to put a lot of things onto a hard disk drive, you know. And so my tech installed another hard drive internally in my stack. Well, the situation is I got the information, I got the material, but I didn't get the information of how to utilize it, how to transfer stuff.
Okay, and the technician has already put the information, has installed the drive for you.
Yeah, he did it when I had my tower in there because
okay.
My little button had gone in and decided to stay, you know, my power button.
Which is not good.
No, but he fixed that, and while he was at it, he had an extra hard drive sitting around, and he just put it in.
Okay, and you are running on Windows, I presume?
Windows XP,
okay.
Home Edition, yeah.
Hard drives in Windows are all, every device you have, whether it's a hard drive or a CD drive or even a diskette drive, are identified to the Windows system with letters of the alphabet. So your first hard drive is typically letter C, as in
right,
Charlie.
And then my other one's F.
Right. You probably should have now, if he installed, if he actually did the full installation, you should see another drive letter for, like it might be G, it might be D. For
there's a D on there.
Okay. If you open up My Computer and double-click on the D drive.
Well, just a second. My Computer.
That's the easiest way, yes. So you've got the My Computer, and you double-click on the icon for My Computer.
Yeah.
And you'll see your C drive, which probably says, you know, your hard drive.
The C and the F are right together.
Okay, and then there is the D. What does the D say after it? Anything? Or what kind of icon do you have?
To be honest with you, have not messed with it. I once had somebody a year or so ago tell me something about a D drive. And I didn't understand what they're talking about, and that's where it ended.
Okay,
but right now I'm seeing if I can find it.
Well, if you just double click on the My Computer icon on your, well, you may not have it on your desktop if you're running XP Home. So if you come down to the start.
All right, I have removable disk D.
Okay, so that's not your hard drive then. If it says removable disk D, do you see anything else there? Do you see like there's a C, there's a D?
There's a C. A C and an F.
And the F is what, a CD?
That's the one he must have installed.
Okay.
I didn't have that before.
All right. Now, if you simply double-click on that F drive.
Yes.
You'll see that it opens up.
Double-click.
Yes. That simply says, I want to look inside it.
All
and
right.
There's your big, your drive, and all you have to do is drag things.
Now, is that double-click right or left?
Just the standard left mouse button. And you'll look inside, and there won't be very much in there.
It has my, it has. Now, see, I'm able to put things into my F, but I don't know how to transfer.
Okay. The easiest way of transferring is going to be to either, well, we can use Windows Explorer, not to be confused with Internet Explorer, or we can, if you've got that window open with, so you're looking inside your drive D right now, right?
I'm looking inside local disk F.
That's right. I'm sorry. Local disk F. Reduce that window so it's not taking up the full screen if necessary, so you've got some more blank desktop on top of the screen.
All right. I'm now back to my
don't close it.
On this computer.
Yeah. And now what you want to have is you want to have two windows open at once, one for your local disk C.
Yeah, that's what I haven't been able to figure out how to do.
Well, you simply go back and double-click on My Computer again.
You delete this.
Leave that window up.
Okay. Then you go back and do it again.
Right. But this time go to local disk C, leaving the previous window up.
Now, okay. I'm waiting for this to happen.
Okay.
because it's that this is what I tried to do because I thought, well, you know, you should be able to just the expression which was used was, oh yeah, just what is that thing about slide and
drag and drop?
Drag, that's it, drag and drop. Well, it doesn't. I understood the, you know, the essence of it.
Well, the first thing before you can drag and drop is you have to see where you're starting from, the files that you
all
have
right,
to transfer.
All right. Well, the thing is, now I
and
have
you
tried to. I have done it twice now. For my computer, double clicked.
Okay.
I'm getting nothing.
So you're not seeing anything. And
I'm only seeing the original one that I had up there to begin with.
All right. That may be, let's see. Is there a setting that we can change so that so when you try to double click on the computer, it just goes back to the window that you already have open?
It appears, yeah. Because oftentimes I'm having some other problems, which if you have a, if you can go into the 2 o'clock hour.
Oh, I think they've got something planned. Let's do this instead then. What I'm going to do is have you launch a program called Windows Explorer. It's a more powerful way of looking at the files instead of just
Windows what?
It's called Windows Explorer, but there's a very easy way of getting to it. There's a
yeah.
keyboard shortcut. You can find it under the menu, but I'm not quite sure where it is under yours. It might be under Start Programs Accessories someplace. But here's a keyboard shortcut that you can use. You have a key on your keyboard near the bottom left that's between the Control and the Alt key. It's the one that's got the little window icon on it. I'm going to guess.
You mean that thing with the lines through it?
Yeah.
Between Control and AFT.
Yes.
Or ALT.
Yes.
Yeah.
Press that key and also the E key, E as in Explorer.
Just the regular one on the keyboard, E.
Yeah. Yes, the regular key, but you want to do them both. Hold down that funny window key with the lines through it and the E as in Explorer key, and that will pop up a window that's called...
All right. I've gotten 4 windows that just popped up.
Well, you held down on it a little bit longer, so I thought you did it 4 times.
Oh, my. We're getting more than that.
Well, let go. Don't hold
no, I let go of it 20 seconds ago. It's just bouncing around right now.
You may have a sticky key or a key that's not really releasing. Try to hit that window key 2 or 3 times and see if you can get it to stop doing that because you really only need 2 of them.
Well, the thing is, they just keep doing their number, and I'm trying to eliminate them, and they're doing that little boom thing.
Right. Well, you should be able to, so you have a whole bunch of these things open. That implies that you had, instead of sending the signal once, it was sending the signal over and over and over again. But you should be able to just close all of them but 2. Just click on the close boxes. If one of them doesn't close because it's got another dialog, just skip that one and go to one of the others. You could also.
Well, the thing is, I'm one by one eliminating. I'm down to about 5 now.
Okay, that's good. Get down to 2. And then what you can do, you'll see in that you probably have over on the left-hand side, each of these windows has 2 parts to it, a left-hand side and a right-hand side.
Just a second, a left-hand side and a right-hand
yeah,
side?
Yeah, you'll see a list of folders over in one of these windows that came up when you did that in what's called Windows Explorer. You will see a pane over on the left, a list of folders and disks and things.
Wait just a second. I'm having a situation here where it appears that my folders keep reappearing.
The windows keep reappearing?
Yeah. The ones that, you know, I've probably done away with 20, and they keep coming back.
If that's happening, again, the computer has to be thinking that those keys are still being pressed, because once you've launched one of these, it should just sit there and not bring up any others unless it...
Well, the thing is, I seldom ever have any problem with my
right.
keyboard, and I keep it cleaned and use the air pressure thing on it.
Right. Well, if they keep coming up, I'm not quite sure why that would
Wait
happen.
Wait just a second. I'm finally, it appears, and I'm going to drag and drop or whatever you do here. I now have two. There's one overlapping another, so I can't see it all, but go ahead.
Okay, now on one of the, and you can move these around a little bit,
yeah.
I realize, and you could resize them if necessary. On the one of them, you'll see your local disk C. Actually, you'll probably see local disk C listed on both of them. Click on.
Excuse me. What do I see?
On the left, in these windows, these two windows that you've got up.
Yeah.
One of those windows has both a left and a right portion to it. You see a list, probably right
there's
over.
There's a list on their desktop.
Yes, And you'll see under there something that says My Computer.
Yeah.
If necessary, click on the plus sign next to My Computer. If it already has a minus, you don't need to. The plus expands it. And then you'll see things like your local disk C and your removable disk D and your disk F.
And I've got a My Disk E, which is the removable disk.
That's fine.
Right.
You can now click on the icon next to local disk C, and what you'll see will be a list of the various contents there. Or you could click on the plus and expand it. You can essentially see all of the various files by expanding that window.
All right, now, just a second. The thing is that I just hit local disk C.
Uh-huh.
And I have Vault, AVG, I have documents and setting, my downloads, program files, and Windows.
Okay, let's try this. This might be the simpler way. Click on the My, underneath desktop, you also see something that says My Documents. I don't know how you've got things stored on your machine, but click on where it says My Documents.
Yeah.
And you'll see
that says my downloads, my e-books, my music, my pictures.
That's the kind of things that you want to be able to move, right? If you click on open any of those are some of the things you want to move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, leave that window alone.
Okay.
Click and open up the other window.
All right, the other window's behind this one, so I'll just
kind of move
down.
It over a little bit and get it up.
Now, I don't have now. I guess I have to click folders in order to bring up that left side again?
Yes. You want to see the left side.
Yeah.
And then click on the plus sign next to My Computer.
Okay. Now, I've got floppy disk.
Right. What you want to do this time is click on the local disk F.
Okay.
And you won't see much over there on the right-hand side, but you'll see some stuff over there.
Yeah, only what I put in there.
That's right.
Yeah.
So now you've got these two windows open, and you can now drag and drop things from one place to the other. But here's the catch.
Yes.
You can of course, resize these windows and move them to wherever you want. So you can see, and you can create new folders. You can manipulate your way through your entire hard drive this way.
Right.
But you have the two windows. But if you just drag a file, like a photo file or something like that, from your local disk C window over to the local disk F window, Windows will assume, since it's going to another drive, that you actually want to make a copy of it, so it'll leave it on C.
Right, I had that problem.
Well, that's what you need to do is, instead of dragging with the left mouse button, hold down the right mouse button and drag while holding down the right mouse button.
The right mouse button?
Yeah, so it's what you would call a right drag.
Right drag.
And when you drop it, normally you just drag with the left mouse button, and when you drop it, of course, it makes a copy. When you right drag or use the right mouse button to drag it, and then you drop it where you want it to go, a little menu will pop up saying, do you want to copy this or do you want to move it?
Now, can you transfer favorites?
Yes, you can. It is in a file that Internet Explorer keeps. I think what you would need to do is in Internet Explorer just choose help, choose favorites, and about how to transfer. There is a set of files that you can transfer. I don't know which files they are directly. If you want to bring up Internet Explorer, you can do that. But
I found it under it has a star emblem on my computer when I get into the right place, which I don't always know where that is, if you understand what I mean. I find things internally here. I'm not that experienced.
Well, that's the basic favorites folder. That's going to move things around within your favorites folder. I know what you mean about the star. What you need to do is actually, if you want to have your favorites, now the favorites don't take up much space. even if you've got a lot of them. That's not storing the web pages. That's storing how to get to them. So that's not going to save you much space moving that.
Yeah.
That simply saves you typing in the address, and you could have thousands of favorites, and it still would not take up very much space. So
yeah, because right now I'm looking at my list for all that I have on my, you know, disk.
Well,
on that hard drive.
The favorites are not really taking up much space, so moving them won't really save you much, and it'll complicate life a little bit because you'll have to reset.
Well, then what will save me? Just transferring all of my folders?
If you've got photos, those take up a lot
of
That will save you an immense amount of space. And if you right drag using the right mouse and say you actually want to move them instead of just copy, what it'll do is it'll copy them over to the drive F and then take them off of drive C, freeing up that space.
In other words, after I've transferred it, then I just go back and delete.
No, you don't have to. If you right drag,
it'll take it.
And if you then in the pop-up menu you say move,
okay,
then it will actually move it. It'll remove it from drive C and put it on drive F.
Okay, well that, you know, the thing is could I have your number in case this doesn't work out?
Well, the best thing to do, I can't really give out my number here, but the best thing to do would be, that should work fine for you, and the best thing to do would be to go, for example, to Internet Explorer or to Google. Actually, you could go to Google and specify some relatively simple search like transferring files.
I did. I have tried to read everything I can, and all I'm getting is externals and all things like that. I've even written in transferring from hard disk C to hard disk
right.
F. That simple a question. How do you?
Well,
and I get all sorts of advertisements and things like
right.
that.
Right. The basic answer, and it actually is very simple, if you can see them both, which you now can do by opening up the appropriate window, you simply drag from one place to the other. Now, realize that when the next time you want to see those photos, you're going to have to tell whatever program you're using to go get them off in drive D. But you just browse for them in the same way that you open up any other file. I'm sorry, drive F. I'm sorry, drive F. I keep thinking my second hard drive is drive D, so I keep saying that automatically. But yours is labeled as F.
Yeah. What is D on this one?
If it says removable, I don't know. What is it? It depends. It depends on how the hardware was set up. It might be a CD drive. That's often the case if you've got a CD drive.
Well, obviously, it has to be something I've never been able to utilize.
It might be a tape backup, if there's a tape backup that was installed. You don't have to use the letters in sequence, so the fact that you haven't used D isn't really going to matter.
Well, right now I'm clicking. It says, when I click that, it says, please insert a disk into drive D.
So it might be a zip disk, which was a way of making backups. It might be probably not a CD-ROM, I'd probably tell you that.
And I've never used a zip.
Well, but the hardware may have it
installed.
Right. There's obviously something installed in the machine.
Also, another thing, may I ask? I'm sorry to take up your time. I hope.
Yeah, we are going to have to move on very quickly.
But how do you get rid of seal synchronization activity and cifabber.exe?
I'm sorry, what was the file again?
Seal synchronization activity.
Seal as in S-E-A-L?
Right.
I'm not familiar with exactly what...
Well, it's some sort of a virus, and it's happened in the last week. I called Microsoft about it.
You have antivirus software installed from...
That's the problem. It's taking over my antivirus software.
That's a whole other question. Let's see. Go to one of whichever antivirus software you're using, whether it's Norton, Symantec.
I'm using AVG.
AVG, which is from McAfee? Who is that from? AVG antivirus, okay.
And also I have Microsoft anti-spyware.
Right, which is a whole different
product. They've not been able to update for the last 4 days.
I am not familiar. I see the AVG site. I am not familiar with it. But that would be the site to go to get assistance. or the people to call to get assistance with getting rid of that.
But I'm afraid this is going to cause me trouble, and I found a way of getting rid of the psi fader, which is a Trojan called Windshow. And I found a way to delete that, but it came back last night.
Well, most, if they're not thoroughly removed, many of the modern-day viruses and Trojans, the program that you see is only one of the programs. There are others that have the sole
right.
purpose in life to bring back anything that you've deleted.
I know.
You might, if you can't get it with AVG, you might want to consider either Symantec or McAfee, and they can boot from a CD if you get it, and then if they boot from the CD, the virus is not there, and you can immediately do a virus check.
You said McAfee, and what was the other
Symantec,
one?
Symantec. Both are very cutting-edge antivirus companies. But we really do need, I'll wish you best of luck on that, we really do need to hit some of the other calls.
Okay, well, I'm sorry for taking your time.
Well, I hope it helps.
Well, no, you were very clear in telling me about the disk drives.
Okay,
and
good luck with it then.
That.
Thank you. We have a call on line one. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you? I bought an HP computer in December, and I've got Windows Media Center XP on it, and I bought it for the express purposes for getting on the net for the first time, so I'm still on the learning curve here. But I have a friend in Phoenix who is tired of my forwarding things, and I get these things from other people, and I can't seem to protect myself from it. Jokes, etc., and they may have like 20 addresses on it, and then somebody else forwards it to another 20 people, and
I've seen those. Yes,
you've seen those, and of course you have to scroll through all that until you finally get to the message. And she said, you know, there's a way to send these messages without all the addresses. And this is what she told me. She said, first of all, you open the final email, you select forward, you fill in the to header that you want to send it on to. Then you highlight and delete the to information from the original email by placing the cursor at the start of the addresses, right-click and drag to the bottom of the header, hit delete, and you got rid of the addresses. The problem is I can't do that. My machine won't allow me to, and I was wondering if it has something to do with the settings in the computer, because when I get to forward and fill in the header, I can't get back to the original email without starting all over again.
Well, I would not right-click. I would simply hold down the left mouse button and drag down across what you want to get rid of. Right-clicking in most programs isn't going to get that job done.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is you can simply, and this works in almost every case, and it's sometimes easier than dragging, is you click once at the beginning of the place that you want to select.
Right.
And then scroll down to the part that you want to get rid of. Scroll down to the place that's at the end of what you want to get rid of. Hold down the shift key and click again. When you click in one place and then hold down the shift and click in another, it automatically selects everything between the two places.
Okay. Now, let me make sure I understand that. You click once.
Click at the start of the place where you want to.
And then hit.
And then simply move the mouse. Don't drag. Just move the mouse down to the end of where you want to.
Okay.
Hold down the shift key and click a second time.
Oh, okay. So you're only holding down the shift key once.
When you click the second time.
Okay.
And then it'll all be selected. Then you just press a delete key.
Oh.
And if you need to, you can do that a few more times until you've deleted everything you don't want.
Okay. Well, I'll give it a try.
But don't use the right mouse button.
No. Well, I kept bringing up a box.
Yeah, that's what it's for.
And it just wasn't working. And I thought, well, she must have.
Well, she may have something else going on, but just either drag across it using the left mouse button or do this click and then shift click. Once it's selected, press delete, and then you've cleaned it up.
Yeah, well, she'll appreciate that.
I'm sure she will.
Thanks so much.
You're quite welcome.
Bye-bye.
All right, line two, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, we're here.
I got a question, and it kind of relates to all those virusy things that was happening in the earlier conversation.
Yes.
I want to upgrade my G3 iBook to the latest one, but now they come out with the one that has the Intel and getting the Windows and everything. And then there was an article in the paper about Macs getting viruses now. And I was just wondering, should I wait to get those things before things are ironed out?
Well, not really. The fact that Macintosh is moving to all Intel processors really isn't going to make much difference in terms of its susceptibility to viruses. There may be a few more because of that. The reason you haven't heard much, the main reason that you haven't heard as much about viruses on the Mac is that it was taking over Windows machines, since there are so many more of them, was much more attractive a proposition for the virus writers and others. So whether you're using a Mac or whether you're using a Windows machine, and whether that Mac is the old PowerPC chip or whether it's the new Intel chip, it's critical to have antivirus software. They make it for the Mac. They make it for Windows. And you are right in assuming it's going to become more of an issue with the Macintosh as two things happening. One is, of course, the Intel chip makes it a little bit easier to modify Windows-related viruses. And the other is there are starting to be more Macs out there, so it starts to be more of an attractive target. So,
I was reading in that article that Mac has decided not to address the issue until the next version comes out.
Well, Macintosh did just, Apple did just release within the last week a set of about 25 patches, which are updates to the very, to the operating system. So they are addressing some of it. Things that look like they're critical, they are going to be dealing with. But you don't depend entirely on Apple. You also have antivirus software, which you can get for the Macintosh from a number of companies.
Okay.
But I would not feel at all constrained about waiting. It's not going to make a big difference. You're going to have antivirus software anyway.
And right. Well, I think they're just closing out some of those, and I could get a good deal on the old stuff. And my wife says, don't do it. So I just thought I'd ask. Thank you very much.
Either would work.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll get another call on line three.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a problem a couple months ago. I have a PC card on my laptop, for my laptop, that's a wireless.
Uh-huh.
Wireless. And I was at an RV park, and it would not work. I mean, I could not get a signal, and their signal was all over the park. I even parked where I could see the tower where it came out of, and I got no signal. Now, what would be my problem?
And it hasn't worked since, or you haven't had a chance to try it since?
Oh, I've used it since in that one park, and they couldn't tell me why it wouldn't work.
But it does work in general, just not in that one park.
Yeah. Is there something wrong with their signal, or is there something I can do to change my settings?
Well, there are a couple of issues that we could look at. One of them, and we'll have to do it fairly briefly, there are a couple of different flavors of wireless access cards of communication protocol. I'm going to guess that the most common is what you're probably using. Did it ask at all for any? So you didn't get any signal at all. It didn't even say there was an encrypted signal.
Yeah, I got nothing.
And
I have the 802.11.
Right, but the question is then 802.11b probably.
802.11g. Yeah.
Oh, 802.11g, which should.
Yeah. I thought it when I bought it that they told me it handled basically everything.
Well, it does. Well, there's anything that you're likely to find, anything that the RV park should have had, G should have been able to handle it. And probably when you use it elsewhere, you're also most public places, coffee shops and such, probably do not have 802.11, or many of them don't have 802.11g, and they're using the earlier version, the 802.11b.
Is there a way I can change my settings while I'm there to, at such a place to so it really work?
I don't have a good answer for that without doing a little bit more looking into what the current settings are. It should work without any difficulty, and I'm afraid I just don't have an answer for you at this point. It's nothing that I've come across. And we're pretty sure that the hardware works fine because it's not a case of...
the hardware has worked fine in other places.
And you did, remove the hardware, reboot the machine and all of that while you were at the RV park, and it still didn't work.
Every day.
Okay, every day. I don't know. I'm sorry I can't give you a better answer for that. Your 802.11g should indeed be compatible with the others.
Yeah.
I will look into that and see if I can find any sort of thing. And next time I'm on, I'll try to address that if you're not able to find it. Also, I would suggest going to some of the technical support sites, and it could be Microsoft or the whoever is the manufacturer of your computer, and post a message there saying, I had this problem, and see if you have, you know, half a dozen people say, oh, yeah, I had that problem as well, and give you a suggestion.
Okay. Can I ask just another quick question?
Very quick, please.
What do you think of wireless broadband cards?
I think they are going to be very much more widespread eventually. I have no problem with them. The question is, where will you have access to it as an alternative to other? I don't have a real strong feeling pro or con, I guess. There are a number of emerging technologies. Wireless broadband is fine.
All right.
I guess we're done.
Want to thank Peter Kimball coming in. We didn't get to a couple of calls, and I apologize for that. Maybe you can take one off the air.
I could do that, yes.
Peter Kimball is our education program coordinator, lead faculty trainer for the U of I's Faculty Staff Training Consortium. He joins us every third Thursday of the month. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Oh, quite welcome. It's always fun.
Now joining us with the settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange, AM580's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Jeff. From the Board of Trade this afternoon, futures finished the day lower in the wheat pit, down anywhere between 3 and 5 cents for the day. And Chicago, Kansas City wheat was up 2 cents in the SEPs in the Julys. That's the harvest month, down a quarter. The rest of the trade down a bit for the day.